Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Once again, no good martini today, just bad, bad, and crazy. And today, only one of them is about Iran. That's just how bad of a news week this is for conservatives. Jim, let's start with Iran for our first bad martini. We talked about the fact yesterday that there are no anytime, anywhere inspections involved in this deal. And as you report in the Jolt, thanks to Patrick Brennan, your colleague at National Review, we know that the Obama administration has deliberately misled the American people and the world on this issue. Back on April 6th, the president's deputy national security advisor, Ben Rhodes, said that anytime, anywhere inspections were going to be part of this. He says, yes, if we see something that we want to inspect in the first place, we will have anytime, anywhere access. Then the energy secretary on April 20th, all of this was right after the framework was completed. He said that we expect to have anywhere, anytime access. And as you report yesterday, CNN's Erin Burnett said, after she was contacted by Ben Rhodes, we never sought anytime, anywhere inspection. So, Jim, we've been played for suckers. Big shock here.
Yeah, and it kind of continues a trend of this administration, which is they have a particular goal, and they will tell Congress, they will tell the American public, they will tell their allies, they will tell anybody anything they think they need to say in order to get what they want. And then once they get what they want, they forget their side of the deal. Back in 2007, 2008, I was saying all statements from Barack Obama come with an expiration date. With this one, I'm sure everyone can fill in the blanks of their favorites. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan was a really important element. I mean, think back, if back in 2009, 2010, President Obama went around the country saying, look, some of you are going to lose your health care plan. If you like your plan, you can't keep it because of my bill. It would not have passed. That assurance that he made 40-some times was really important. Well, the whole time he's going through this entire negotiation process, he and John Kerry and our energy secretary and Rhodes and everybody else kept insisting, look, this is not just a leap of faith. It is trust, but verify, and verification is going to be from being able to inspect anywhere, anytime, any place, whenever we want. And really, that was really the only way to make a deal like this work, which is basically many of us, having bothered to look even into the slightest glance of the history of the Iranian regime, know they can't be trusted. So a major point of this is a sense of like, look, you're basically saying this will work even though we can't verify that they're keeping their word. And Obama thinks that's going to work. And when they're not saying, it's not really that important, despite having given that assurance, as Ben Rhodes does, there was some ninny Democratic congressman, Don Beyer, who's, well known for selling people Volvos in the Northern Virginia area,
right?
Who said, this will give us every Iranian facility is under 24/7 watch of the international community. And none of it's true. And I'm just kind of marveling, like he can just come out and tell his constituents, this deal is great because it allows us to watch everywhere. When you look at the text of the agreement, and it doesn't. The fact that you feel the need to make that promise means you recognize that it's important, means you recognize people won't trust this deal without the full anywhere, anytime inspection regime. And yet, because it's not in there, you're just like, pretend it doesn't exist. The level of cynicism and duplicity, even to every time you think you're used to it from this administration, it gets worse.
Yeah, which makes you wonder why they did this if they know that they're not going to have access anytime. The text, what we're hearing based on interviews I saw last night involving Dick Cheney, is that you're looking at about a 24-day span between the time you request an inspection and the time you're likely to get one, if it doesn't go to that arbitration board you mentioned yesterday, Jim. So the Baltimore Colts, I remember, moved an entire football franchise overnight. So I'm pretty sure you can move a lot of nuclear technology in 24 days if you have that kind of heads up.
And what's more, so let's suppose they don't. Suppose that, because they get to have a say and there needs to be unanimous agreement amongst all the parties on the board, if they said, no, you can't inspect that site, what happens? Allegedly, the administration, we're going to snap back the sanctions, but you need a unanimous vote at the United Nations Security Council for that stuff. Otherwise, it's just piecemeal sanctions. So, everything they've said about this deal has been false, and yet they're taking a victory lap. It's really appalling because you can't have consensual government if the people who are doing the governing keep lying about what they want to do.
It's incredible. And you mentioned
that's our cheery martini.
You mentioned Don Beyer. He's from a very hard left district. On WMAL, the local Washington talk station this morning, they had Dutch Ruppersberger, who's from suburban Baltimore, who's also a liberal, but he used to be the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. So he's not a complete nut job. And he was pretty much parroting the administration talking points, too. So unless he hasn't actually read it yet, it looks like even some of the more sober-minded Democrats are probably going to get on board with this. And that's not a good sign, given the numbers we need to stop this thing. All right, on to the other bad martini now. And if you watched this video at lunch yesterday, my apologies. The group Center for Medical Progress launched a website on Tuesday. And in doing so, they launched a video that was, I believe, 3 years in the making, undercover, working at Planned Parenthood. The video showed, most notoriously, this woman, Deborah Nucatola, a senior director of medical research, just casually at lunch talking about the fact that there's a lot of interest in fetal organs. So they go around and make sure that they can harvest, when they do abortions, hearts, lungs, livers are very popular now. You can get between $30 and $100 per liver. And then here's her casual explanation of how she makes sure she doesn't damage these organs for their customers when she's killing babies in the womb.
So I'm not going to crush that part. I'm going to basically crush below, I'm going to crush above, and I'm going to see if I can get it all intact.
So I'm going to crush below, I'm going to crush above, and I'm going to see if I can get it all intact. Jim, it's so chilling on so many different levels about the business they're involved in here, and then the fact that she can talk about it so casually while eating her salad.
Yeah, I mean, if you did this scene in a movie or a novel, people would say it was over the top and heavy-handed. I'm just going to make one kind of observation about this, Greg. Yesterday, you know, my thinking on this is pretty clear. But to me, it was a useful indicator of this, that I tried to not necessarily use let's just say black humor, very dark humor. I said the fetal body parts commodities market is taking a beating today. Heart, lung, liver futures all down. And some people objected. And I said, you know, well, maybe by comparing a fetal body parts market to Wall Street, some liberal might actually find it objectionable. Somebody else had observed that, you know, finally liberals have found an unregulated free market that they like. Lefties said, Jim, this is offensive. Particularly my picture of Hannibal Lecter with the quote, I'd say a lot of people want liver, the quote from the Planned Parenthood official there. And of course, I put the Planned Parenthood logo on it, on the picture of Hannibal Lecter. And there were a lot of people, Greg, who deemed that offensive and tasteless and appalling. Now, partial birth abortion, they don't find offensive and tasteless and appalling. But my tweet about it is bad. My tweet might offend you. It might bother you. But that's besides the fact that it's protected by the First Amendment. I haven't cut anybody to do that. All right? You know, it's all my scalpels are metaphorical. The morally topsy-turvy world of these people, in which whatever you're thinking on abortion in general is, I think, you know, that there's a pretty widespread moral consensus that partial birth abortion, because, you know, right there in the name, partial birth is getting, you know, way too close to infanticide or just flat out murdering a child for most people's taste. And yet I make a joke about that. I make, you know, some derisive comments about that. And that's offensive. That's wrong. It just seems morally inverted here. And, you know, if you don't want to be compared to Hannibal Lecter, you know, don't casually talk about the trading of human livers. You know, that seems kind of pretty straightforward to me. Pretty interesting and revealing. The media coverage has been as begrudging as we would expect. The euphemisms are flying fast and furious. And it's, an indicator of just how deeply rooted that some defenders of abortion are, particularly in our media and political elites. The point where, like, you know, it's not just that, you know, abortion must be legal or partial birth abortion must be legal, but we can't even, you know, object to the wink, wink, nudge, nudge trading of fetal organs. You start rooting for the sweet meteor of death in that scenario.
Yeah, and kudos to several of the Republican presidential candidates. I don't think the mainstream media would have touched this at all if several of them, including Bobby Jindal, Carly Fiorina, I think Rick Perry as well, issued very strong statements on this. And almost force the media to have to cover this, even though they're doing it in euphemistic language. At least it's out there. And the next time that a Republican in a debate tries to get the media tries to catch them on a rape and incest question, you can trot this back out there along with gender selection abortions and other things that Democrats can't possibly defend.
Here's the thing. I know this is a country that doesn't have a unified opinion on abortion, and that there are a lot of people in this country who aren't as pro-life as me, and we can have that discussion. We can tell why the press doesn't want to discuss this, because once you start discussing this, all of a sudden the pro-life side doesn't look like a bunch of crazies who are trying to blow up clinics. All of a sudden they look pretty reasonable. They kind of feel like if you objected to the slave trade,
Well, then, the idea of a trade in human organs and, you know, crushing, you know, unborn children, trying to keep their organs alive. I mean, the whole idea of this is that, well, you can take this life because it's not really a human life. It just has no value, right? There is no constitutionally protected value to that person, except their organs can be resold for cash, which kind of contradicts this notion that they have no value and are not deserving of constitutional protections there. So I'll just be banging my head against the wall for a good portion of the day on this, Greg.
Just disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. And the crazy martini is not much different. Yesterday, Secretary of Homeland Security Jay Johnson was testifying before Congress and the issue of sanctuary cities and the Kate Steinle murder in San Francisco came up. The biggest part of this from Jay Johnson was in under questioning from Steve Chabot of Ohio, where he asked a simple question about whether anybody from the administration had actually reached out to the Steinle family. Here's how that went.
Has the administration reached out to the Steinle family, to your knowledge?
To who?
To the family of the woman who was brutally murdered by this individual who had committed 7 different felonies in 4 different states, in my understanding, who'd been deported, kept coming back. And has the administration reached out to that family?
I'm sorry. I don't know the answer to that question, sir.
Jim, are they really pretending that they don't know anything about this story?
The first thing is, maybe for him, the easiest play when he's put on the spot like that is to plead ignorance. And that later on, if they really does become a major, you know, controversy or brouhaha or makes him really look bad, he takes political damage, he can turn around and say, oh, yes, we had. I just hadn't been informed of it. My staff had reached out, yada, yada, yada. This assumes that they had. But as we saw with our previous martini, when there is bad news for the progressive cause, the easiest thing to do is ignore it and pretend like it doesn't exist. He certainly seems to not recognize the name. When it's further, you know, laid out for him about who this woman was and why she's in the news and why the congressman is asking about this, he pleads ignorance, which, you know, and he doesn't seem terribly afraid of this, right? This isn't going to be a George H.W. Bush in the supermarket scanner moment where it's seen as this very revealing indicator of somebody being in a bubble and not really knowing what's going on in the world. Why would the Department of Homeland Security guy who's talking about sanctuary cities know about this, right? Right? You know. And then the third one, it was a point made by Megyn Kelly, and it's starting to get around out there. Like, look, when Trayvon Martin is killed, there's great moral outrage, and then members of this administration go to speak out to his family. When it's Ferguson, when it's Baltimore, when there is a tragic death that this administration finds politically useful, that they believe they can use to exploit, to whip up a particular atmosphere and mood, and you might even say frenzy, they are right there. They rush to that. But when a crime comes along that doesn't go along with the narrative they want, they really want to pretend it doesn't want to happen. And it's very easy to imagine a Republican president or a future Republican attorney general traveling out to San Francisco and talking to the victim's family and trying to talk about, you know, this case is an unspeakable tragedy and an outrage that our citizens live in fear of this. You can argue about whether you think of that as politically exploitative or what, but that's just kind of the way modern politics is played. I'd like to live in a political discourse that was a little less tear-jerking and emotionally manipulative and things like that. But that's the way the game is played. But the idea that the Department of Homeland Security is totally pleading ignorance to what has been a huge story, I think is pretty revealing, that they really would rather pretend this didn't happen because it so disrupts their notion that sanctuary cities are not a bad thing. In fact, they're a good and moral thing. They're well-meaning, trying to protect these innocent illegal immigrants who have done nothing wrong other than enter the country illegally. And that really all the people who are upset about it, they're the bad guys because they're somehow xenophobic and et cetera, et cetera. Again, also, it probably feels like a broken record when we complain about the media, but it's very easy to imagine a scenario in which a Republican figure has not heard of a recent news event and it becomes a very big deal, whereas Jay Johnson, not knowing about a story that's been, you know, very big in certain circles for, you know, the past 2 weeks, he's oblivious to it, and I don't think anybody's going to make a big deal out of this whatsoever outside of conservative press.
This is just a week where we sigh at the end of every martini, I think.
Yeah, this is not a good week, everybody. Sorry, you know.
You're looking forward to that cruise more and more every day after this week.
We got to balance out at some point, so.
Yes, maybe tomorrow. Jim, talk to you then.
See you then.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Please tune in again tomorrow for the Thursday edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.